There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. Media freedom and our right to communicate. Your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Mandelin, and I'm your host. On today's program, Apple keeps bonking apps from its app store. This time, maybe it tangled with the wrong producer. We'll be talking with Tim Carr, campaign director for Free Press, about why the FCC is now making some inquiries to Apple, AT&T, and Google about the application most recently blocked from the store. Do stay tuned. Here on Media Geek, we've been talking quite a bit about mobile phones, mobile internet, mobile broadband, because it's very obvious that this is a new frontier for media. As we see traditional broadcasts like radio and television losing audience share, more and more people are receiving lots of data and multimedia via their phones. In fact, many more people across the country own phones than own computers, and many more people across the country are getting their information and their internet via a mobile device rather than via a computer. And so that's why we are concerned and want to pay attention to our ability to communicate and receive good information and send information via our mobile devices. So news came down about a week ago that Apple had blocked a new application from Google called Google Voice from its App Store. And that seemed to be a bit of the straw that broke the camel's back with regard to this practice of approving or not approving applications for the iPhone. So I wanted to talk to Tim Carr. He's a campaign director for Free Press, which is a nonpartisan organization looking out for the public interest in media and technology, hoping that he could tell us more about what's going on.
Cell phones obviously use part of the spectrum that the FCC has some regulatory authority over, so it's not an unusual place for them to be, but what's unusual is what's apparent change of direction at the FCC under the new leadership. Chairman Julius Janikowski was just sworn in last month, that is looking seriously at the issues of problems of competition and consumer choice in the cell phone marketplace. And there's a number of forces that are at play here. One is cell phones have become internet-enabled, which raises a whole new level of possible legal issues with how people get on the internet, how they use those services. It may fit into another regulatory structure. And at the same time, we see an increasing consolidation of the carrier market. Right now, 90% of all mobile phone subscribers in the United States go through just four carriers, and Sprint, Qwest, AT&T, and Verizon, their wireless divisions. And so there are concerns about local market monopolies and the abuse by these companies of consumer choice and anti-competitive ways. And we had a perfect example of that on Friday, or last week, when we learned that Google Voice, which is a new sort of supercharged voice over internet protocol service, is being blocked by Apple and the iPhone. And there's some question as to whether AT&T, which is partnered with Apple on the iPhone, had something to do with that, because the voice application is competitive with certain AT&T businesses.
Can you say a bit more about what Google Voice is and why that might be a threat to Apple or AT&T?
Well, Google Voice is sort of like Skype on steroids. It's a voice over internet protocol service. It's based on this idea that you can use a high speed internet connection to manage your phone calls. But it does more than that. It has a messaging feature. It basically allows you to take your phone number and divorce it from your device and divorce it from whatever service you have. All you need is a high-speed internet connection, and you could do most of your things that you do on the telephone via that. Now, this obviously is a new innovation in the marketplace, but it also goes right up against an established business model, which is the sort of long-distance and wireless phone services from which traditional carriers profit considerably. So with the introduction of Google Voice, there's a dependency on Google's part in getting open access to networks whereby people can use this application without any interference from the network provider itself. But then you have now a tendency amongst the network providers to try to control wireless cell phone connections to the internet in ways that disables applications, that prevent competitive innovations from interfering with their established business models.
And so Google wanted to sell or give away an application for Google Voice that would be used on an iPhone.
Yeah, they had applied to be a part of the App Store offerings on the iPhone, and Apple said no. What has happened at the FCC under Denikowski now is that on Friday, the Wireless Bureau there sent a letter to Apple, AT&T, and Google listing a series of detailed questions to try to get to the bottom of this decision. And AT&T has maintained that they have nothing to do with Apple's choice of which applications work or not, but there's some suspicion that indeed they may be giving Apple some feedback as to what types of applications they like and what types of applications they don't like. AT&T had blocked Skype's VoIP application on their new 3G network, and so this is sort of a similar move. There's a Sling Media, which is a video playing device, has also had an application that's been turned down. So the FCC, and now we learned on Wednesday or Tuesday of this week that the FTC and the DOJ are also interested in looking in potential anti-competitive practices. So it's a rapidly shifting landscape where we have in the United States about 270 million people who are using cell phones. Increasingly, those cell phones are becoming internet-enabled. They're doing more than just, sending and receiving phone calls, but you can use them to surf the internet, to collect and share video, things like that. There's a whole new legal structure that people are looking at to govern this new portal to the internet, and it's created a pretty interesting environment, and it's a pretty interesting time at the FCC. And so what we're doing at Free Press is to make sure that whatever decisions come out of this changing landscape are for rules that protect an open internet, protect the public interest.
But isn't it fair to say that Apple's iPhone is just one of many phones available, and if you really wanted to use the Google Voice application, someone could just go and get a different phone, perhaps a phone that uses Google's own Android phone operating system?
Well, I think that the ideal would be a marketplace that's full of choice, not only choice of the device that you use, but also the choice of the networks that you choose from. And if you live in certain parts of the country, you do have more than one choice for a mobile phone service, but there are parts of the country where you only have one. And in addition to that, they have created what are called exclusivity agreements between device manufacturers and the network owners. So if you are interested in using the iPhone, you have to use it on AT&T's proprietary wireless network. They've been shackled together in a way that limits consumer choice. So even in addition to some of the issues that the FCC is looking at, we see in Washington interest in Senate potentially in introducing a handset exclusivity legislation that would look at this notion of shackling devices to networks and try to give consumers more choice so that we're not locked into these contracts in that way. And there's an additional element to that is that, you know, if you're a consumer who wants to change from one network or one phone to the other, there are very, very high termination fees that discourage people from moving across networks or having more choice within the marketplace. So it's the cell phone, the mobile phone marketplace in the United States is anything but a free and open market. It's one where these virtual local monopolies exert fairly high level of control over the types of choices consumers have.
So aside from the costs for a given consumer to change networks, I mean, what are some of the other real effects here? Why is there such the great concern about having a bigger market in terms of availability of both the devices, handsets, and applications? I mean, what are some of the bigger implications for both consumers but also for communications?
Well, I mean, for many people, the future of the internet is mobile. We have a much broader penetration in the United States of mobile phones than we do of a high-speed internet. High-speed internet connections in the United States extend to little more than 60% of the country. So you have about 40% of the country who aren't online. But if you look at the mobile phone industry, there are reportedly 270 million subscribers to mobile phones, and that's 87% of the population. So there is an access issue. If mobile phones are becoming internet enabled for a lot of people, this could be their portal to the internet. And it's very important that the internet remain open. It's been a great engine of economic growth and innovation and creativity because of its open nature. But at the moment, the mobile phone, the legal structure that governs mobile phones in the United States allows for the carriers to some extent to limit your access to the internet in a way that makes it not a true open internet. So it has important implications as far as the digital divide is concerned. And we're increasingly looking at internet connectivity as the essential infrastructure of the 21st century. It's a way for people to further their careers, to further their education, and do all sorts of important things. And if we can't free up the cell phone internet market, the mobile internet market, in the same way that we're trying to free up the landline internet market, we face some problems with people who have access to a very limited form of the internet.
Are there areas or regions where obtaining internet access on a mobile phone is difficult or nearly impossible?
There are parts of the country where you don't have full mobile access. I don't have with me the complete map, but there are parts where they're less accessible. There are other parts where you have fewer choices, is limited to one local provider in some cases, and these sorts of local monopolies present all sorts of problems as well. So, you know, I think the mobile internet space is really interesting in a way that it's sort of the next innovation in connectivity to the internet, and with these new handheld devices, I think it's really revolutionizing the way we think about internet connectivity. Now people can bring an internet connection with them wherever they go. They don't need to lug around a heavy laptop or go to an internet cafe to get online. They can actually be connected as they're on the go, and that has a lot of potential. And we need to make sure, and there's a lot of economic benefit, social benefit that can come out of a truly mobile internet. And we need to make sure that the policy structure protects the basic online freedoms that we've come to expect with the internet. So we're at a real critical juncture in the history of media policy right now. And some of the decisions that are going to be made at the FCC, and in Congress in the next couple of years could have a lasting impact on the way we regard the internet for generations to come.
Some of the applications you mentioned that have been blocked from the specifically the iTunes store for the App Store for the iPhone. You mentioned this new Google Voice application, which we just found out about. Skype, which is a voice over IP web conferencing system, and this other application called Sling Media.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me, just an understanding of why these particular applications would be something that Apple and or AT&T wouldn't want accessible over their cell network?
If you look at a company like AT&T, you see a company that's not only involved in the mobile internet space, the mobile phone space. They're also providing landline internet connections. They have a television cable type service. They're dealing with traditional landline phones. They are a massive communications company that has business interests across the media landscape. And so when they see one of their services potentially cannibalizing some of their other businesses, if they see people using, in this example, a mobile internet connection via an iPhone to do things that they AT&T would prefer they were doing in the telephone space, then there is a threat in their perception to their legacy business model. So we're very, very keen, we're very, very sensitive to these types of decisions to block applications in the mobile space when it appears that they're doing that to protect a legacy business model. And this is a type of predatory practice where you have very powerful companies playing gatekeepers to new innovations. It stifles innovations, it stifles economic growth, and it stifles new entrants into a marketplace where there is very little competition. So the federal government, through the FCC and the FTC, has been charged to some extent to make sure that these types of monopolies and these types of anti-competitive practices don't take place, and that the market, as best as possible, is free and open, and that consumers benefit from competition and choice. So with the new legislative environment in Washington, a new commissioner, a new chairman, some new commissioners at the FCC, new members of Congress, a new White House, there is an opportunity now to revisit some of the policy decisions that have been made over the last couple of decades and to make sure that these very entrenched carriers don't have ultimate say over the future of the Internet.
What would be a better looking cellular and mobile phone and internet market?
Well, the sort of dream, the dream scenario, if you will, is something more akin to an open access model, whereby, as a consumer, you can choose any phone of your liking, and you'll have multiple choices of networks, and regardless of the phone you choose, it can be plugged into that network. And once you're on that network, and if you're using the phone for internet access, you have net neutrality. And there is no way that the network provider can block or discriminate against the types of services or websites or applications that you would choose to go to. So, I mean, hopefully in the future there will be a time when our mobile internet devices that we carry in our pocket or that are sewn into our cortex are fully open, so that you have the ability to go on the internet, to have complete interconnectivity to everybody else that's on the internet without a carrier acting as a gatekeeper and blocking certain applications or services.
How can I help motivate policy?
Well, there you can also get involved in the policy debate itself, and we at Free Press are running a campaign called Free My Phone, where you can write the FCC and your members of Congress and ask for a more open structure for cell phones. So the Free My Phone campaign has been very active in pressuring the FCC and Congress to take action on this. So if you go to Free Press, there are some opportunities to learn more there and get involved in a public campaign to push for better policies in the cellular space.
And do you think things are looking should we say optimistic at the FCC or possibly the Federal Trade Commission or Congress?
Well, I think we have a very new chairman at the FCC, so, time will tell, but he has already, in his first month in office, indicated that he really wants to look into this issue of anti-competitiveness. He sent out these letters to AT&T and to Apple and to Google to try to look more deeply into this issue of handset exclusivity and anti-competitive behavior. And he's got the backing there also of another commissioner, Michael Copps, who before Jenikowski came into office was the acting chairman. And Copps has also made statements in support of this. So I think we're at a moment right now that where things are looking better than ever before. But, you know, there's a dark history that precedes this. The FCC has largely been the handmaiden of the phone and cable and broadcast lobby for years and years. And we're hopeful now with this new chairman and the new Congress and a new White House that we'll begin to see more public interest policies that govern our communications infrastructure.
All right, Tim. Well, thanks for taking some time to let us know more about the possible future of our mobile internet devices.
My pleasure.
Well, that was Tim Carr, who is campaign director for the public interest group Free Press, which focuses on issues of media democracy and information, especially broadband, talking about the recent inquiry the FCC has made into Apple choosing to block the Google Voice application from the iTunes application store for the iPhone. Of course, we were talking about all sorts of issues with regard to mobile phone and broadband technology. What do you think about the future of freedom to communicate in the mobile broadband environment? We're also on Twitter, twitter.com/MediaGeek. Twitter did have a bit of did actually experience a denial of service attack earlier this morning, but they seem to be back up and running. So we're definitely taking your tweets there. If you're on the Twitter, twitter.com/MediaGeek, and let us know what you think about this question at hand. I did get a tweet earlier today. I put the question out a couple days ago before the show went to air. And we heard from Mitchie Chan, who was on the program a couple of weeks ago. In fact, did actually call in. Mitchie Chan says that AT&T and Apple are bringing phone service back to the late 1800s when there was no interconnectivity between competing telephone companies. And that's true. In the early days of telephone, you might have a local telephone company and there was no ability to talk to someone else on another telephone company in another city. And in fact, in the very early days, you might have two different telephone companies in the same town and you would not be able to actually call each other. We do have a caller on the phone. Hello, you're on the air with Media Geek.
Oh, hi, Ted here. How are you this evening? I'm enjoying the show.
Great, I'm glad you're enjoying it. So what do you think? What do you think about this whole conundrum of Apple picking and choosing which apps get into the store and possibly disfavoring applications which would let you do cool voice things, but that might also compete with AT&T's voice network?
Yeah, well, I hate to see any of the carriers limiting the functionality of, you know, what's available to the customer. And I think, you know, customer choice is always the ultimate. But, you know, I found it interesting you were talking about the basics versus the frills and what's perceived as crucial services and what isn't. I have a professional interest. I'm a 911 operator.
Okay.
And I see a problem with the emerging technologies, 3G and 4G, impact the way the current network is able to process 911 calls.
Mm.
Our equipment is increasingly being challenged and slowing down call processing by the newer technologies, and there seems to be a gap that the providers really aren't addressed. And there's also a misconception that the network, there's two technologies based in a GPS handset-based technology that are used to locate these calls. And there seems to be a misconception that you have to have a GPS-enabled handset and be on a GPS network in order for 911 operators to find you. That's not really the case, although my personal experience is that GPS technology is superior. But I wanted to address that because I see that increasingly in the media. They refer to either a cheap phone or a pay-as-you-go phone as not being locatable.
Hmm.
That's not really the case, but I see that emerging as the current conception. But enjoying the show tonight, and definitely have to agree with a lot of what you're saying about the marketplace and high-tech services. You know, I'd like to see the life safety aspect addressed. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's something that needs to keep in mind when they're making these decisions.
Right. I mean, I know that, right now it's required that cell phones, handsets be locatable for 911 calls and to support 911 calls to begin with. I know that they can be located if you don't have a GPS-enabled phone like an iPhone or some other phones, or iPhone 3G, that is, that it, by using the cell towers, because it's a triangulation scheme, it gives your 911 operators some idea where a phone is. Obviously, a GPS phone is much more accurate. I was curious if you could elaborate a little bit more in how you're seeing the newer technologies make it more difficult to respond to emergency calls, if you have any more specific instances or types of instances.
Yeah, it's a complex subject, and some of the, you know, the 911 technology was an overlay on the cellular network. We're really still on the first version of the cellular network in this country, and we're all overlaid to provide this functionality. None of the technologies work 100% all the time with perfect function, which is, you know, a big throwback from calling 911 from your home.
So with
that, there's the expectation we can always find you regardless of circumstance, and that's not the case. It's an imperfect technology that's been overlaid, so it's problematic. But and I'm hoping a new generation of cellular infrastructure will come along and, you know, provide better functionality for the emergency callers in the field.
Hey, Ted, just a quick question: do you find your job very stressful?
It can be. It's become a increasingly technological, challenging, you know, type of work to be engaged in. It used to be really straightforward, and now there's a lot of work with each call. The new technologies, they seem to be slowing down the call processing, and we have to do additional inquiries on each call to try to callers' locations, and it doesn't always work.
Do you find that most people that call in are on the verge of panicking, if not panicking, or are people usually calm?
People are usually, you know, we get it's changed the dynamic of the profession because we're getting calls from the scenes or near the scenes. But, you know, most people don't have an awareness of where they are when they're calling. It's just not something people think about. You know, where exactly am I? When I've seen this emergency, I want to call it in, which is great, but they may not know exactly where it is and where they are, which is really, really crucial getting emergency services to a scene.
Okay. Well, Ted, thanks a lot for calling in.
Enjoying the show. Have a good night, guys.
You too. And that brings to a close this edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in one more week with more news and views on our media environment. Our guest will be Jim Chilson from the Citizens Utility Board. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. It's home to the Media Geek blog. The Twitter feed is at Twitter.com/MediaGeek. The radio show is at Radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast or listen in your browser, Radio.MediaGeek.net. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to me, Paul@MediaGeek.net. And check out my group blog. It's all about radio and its future, and how it'll survive. It's radiosurvivor.com. Thanks for tuning in.